You're listening to Discover Hope with Pastor Tom Leake of Hope Bible Church in Columbia, Maryland.
Of course it's a better lifestyle. That's why they need to be converted. That's why they need to be saved. You're supposed to live better than them. You're supposed to be the example. You're supposed to be the holy one among them, as they will mock, but you need to be. So, but Pastor, that sounds like I'm boasting. No, when they look at the good works that are in your life, then you give glory to who? To Christ. See, I used to be like you, and he saved me. He dredged me up, and he saved me. He washed me and cleansed me, and you can be like me too. If you weren't different and you weren't better, what's the point of becoming a Christian? Don't buy into that lie from Satan.
This world isn't how God designed it to be. It's full of the darkness of the evil one. The things the world offers you will quickly fade and will never satisfy. Today, Pastor Tom will help clarify what it means to be in the world without loving the world and its lures. You can't love both this evil world and God who is holy. You must make a choice. If your Christianity is true and your faith is real, you should be wholly different than the world. Allow your moral purity to be a light in the darkness. Now, here's Pastor Tom in the book of James chapter 1 as he continues his message, True Religion.
If you've experienced the grace of God in your life, if that's true of you, then it translates into, I'm going to care for somebody else. Look, there's somebody in need. Oh, that's going to mess up my schedule because, see, I had a wonderful afternoon planned for myself. But this person's in need. That's pure and undefiled religion, you see. By the way, God is not our mother. Did you get that? Did you look in there? Please, next time someone says God is mother, just take him right here. He's father. So how do you know he's father? Because he said he was. You know, if I was a father, walked in the store and I said, I'm father, someone called me a mother, I'd be kind of upset. Nothing wrong with being a mother. Being a mother is a fine thing. Being a mother is a wonderful thing. I'm not a mother, I'm a father. God's a father. He calls himself father. And these translations of the Bible and these people going around saying God is mother also, no, he's father. That's what he said. He's the originator. He's the creator. He's the recreator in Christ. We get our life from his son, and his son is like the father. His son reveals the father. Your heavenly dad is watching you this week. He wants to know if you're practicing pure and undefiled religion. How can I do that? Visit orphans and widows in their distress. There it is. There's the target. That's the bullseye to aim at. Visit the widows and orphans in their distress. Not when they're having it good, but when they are in their distress. In the sphere of all the pressure that there is in being an orphan and a widow, when it's very hard for them, when they can't give you anything back, when all they're going to do is take your time and your money, visit them. And visit them does not mean have a gregarious chat with them. Visit them, the very implication of the word in Greek is that you're coming ready to help them in some way. Who are the orphans? You know who orphans are. They don't have any parents. They're deprived of their parents by death or abandonment. They can't fend for themselves. Often they can't feed themselves. They don't have a guardian. No one's looking after them. They're exposed to elements. Many of them die. Widows just means a woman who was married lost her husband to death. Widows in that culture are not usually able to care for themselves. They couldn't go out and get a job. There was no job for women outside of the home except for the occupation called prostitution. They want to go do that. Widows could go from having a very secure economic situation to almost instant insecurity. They're in distress. A complete change of lifestyle. James says widows and orphans need to be visited in their distress. Can you imagine what distress there is economically, health-wise? Concern about safety and protection for the orphans and the widow. So when you go to visit them, come with something in hand. Come carrying something. Here, I heard that you need this. And I also brought this along. You know, and I gave it a little bit of thought, and I thought you might need this. Do you need this? I've come ready to help. By the way, who's going to fix the lock on your back door? And what other needs do you have? Can we get something for you? You come ready to visit them. Why did James pick on this thing to show true religion? I'll tell you why. Because this is a display of love, mercy. See, if you have true faith in Christ, it's going to work its way into your life, into the fabric of the way you think, so that now you want to start loving other people. No, I'm not talking about loving your friends. They've always been easy. They're your friends, you like them, you party with them, you do things, you invite them over. loving the people who are not your friends, who are not like you. You don't necessarily enjoy, but you love them because they have needs. Faith, Paul says, needs to work itself through love. In fact, you look at all the writers of the New Testament, they say, if you want to try to figure out if someone has real faith in Jesus Christ, look to see if there's love there. Is the root of the tree good? I can't see it. It's down beneath the ground. It's in the dirt. You know, I was out digging roots up the other day. It's hard digging up roots. I'm sweating away. I was having a good time, though. I just like that, just being outside in the mud and the dirt and all of that. But you don't know what's going on with the roots, so you dig down in there, and you're like, wow, look at all those roots. There's a lot of roots down there. But if you want to know if the root is good, you look for the fruit on the tree. Oh, that's a good fruit. Must be a good root. That's what it is with you. If your faith is good, if your faith is real, if your faith in Jesus has landed in the right spot, they're going to look at the fruit. What's the fruit? Love. Love for other people. And where's the best way of testing whether or not you have love? If you love those that can't give anything back to you. 1 John 3. Whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Can't. Just a real practical way of evaluating that theology. That theology says if you have true faith, you're going to have love. And I know that love will grow. I'm not talking about being an instant saint here. But there should be something in you that's saying, I want to give, I want to help, I want to do this. I just learned to love this person, and I know 3 years ago I never would have loved them like that. That's what should be happening. Paul said faith works through love. Peter said, since you have in obedience to the truth purified your souls for a sincere love of the brethren, fervently love one another from the heart. James says love is the royal law in chapter 2. Jesus put it this way in Luke 14. It says he went out and said to the one who had invited him, he was invited to something, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives. Now, he didn't mean never do that. Or rich neighbors. Otherwise, they may also invite you in return, and that will be your repayment. But when you give a reception, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, since they do not have the means to repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Don't you love that? It's the resurrection of the righteous coming. I'm going to be repaid. Are you going to be paid anything at the resurrection of the righteous? You got to start making some investments now, see? Who are the distressed in our society? This is a harder question because government has taken over so much now of what used to be the role of the church and families. Government takes over more and more and more, and people say that's a good thing, and they're going to care for the poor, and there's this protection, and that really was never the design for government that God had from the beginning. It was really the role of the church, and it was the role of the people. It was the role of the families to get out there and meet needs. And now you look around, and you're like, well, who's poor? We have a poverty level here in America. It's not really that poor when you compare it. There's millions of people that are in the poverty level. You put them overseas and be like, man, you have a lot. You have a lot. Kind of hard to figure out who are the real poor in our society. Obviously, in some countries, developing countries, poorer countries, there's some real poverty there. That would be some of the ones that need our input. Maybe some of them are the homeless. Some people are homeless because of bad habits. Some people are homeless because of bad things that have happened to them. And it takes sometimes discernment to know what's going on. You know, some people are locked up in prison because they deserve to be locked up in prison, right? Orphans and widows, he pulls them out because they didn't deserve that. They didn't deserve mom and daddy to die on them. The husband just, you know, went and died on them. Now what? You know? And then there was no safety net for them there. Maybe the handicapped in our society. Maybe in some cases the homeless. We have a mercy ministry we began here. Thomas was leading that. Join him, help him. He's trying to find those, you know, single parents maybe. Single mothers have several kids. They need some help. Get out there. Some of them are not teachable. Maybe some of them made some bad mistakes, but we want to have mercy to them. We want to reach out. We want to care for them. Do you have a neighbor that has needs? Looks like they have real needs. And maybe they did make some bad decisions, and maybe they're suffering from that. And maybe they've learned a little bit of a lesson there. You can still go and help them, right? They're still suffering. Maybe there's someone in church. We have a Helping Hands Fund here, a benevolence fund, we call it. You can donate to that so that folks in the church can be cared for. You look for them. You open your eyes. Inner city ministry, you help them out. And help the church too, please, because you see, if we had more of you volunteering your time, then we could start more ministries to help the poor We just need your time. We need people to coordinate and lead and do that. When you have a heart for the needy, your wallet comes out of your pocket. It comes in your hand, you open it up, and you find something in there, and you make a payment. That's what happens. You open your heart, and you open your wallet. You open your heart, and you open your pocketbook. That's how it works, okay? You open up your heart, and you write a check. And so that's how it is. And then you give time. You don't say you don't have time, you make time. And you find who you can care for. So that's the second test. We come to the third and last test, and that is keeping yourself unstained by the world. Again, this is going to jump to chapter 4. And James is going to talk all about worldliness and the love of the world there and how incompatible that is with God. We're going to get a little bit of a sneak preview to that right here. And he says, keep yourself unstained by the world. In other words, don't let, it's kind of the clothing analogy. You have some nice threads on you. Got some nice clothes on you. You don't want to go with your nice clothes and go do a dirty job right now, right? So you are in a world that's dirty is the point. You know, the world is the cosmos. Sometimes the word world refers to the planet. More often it refers to the world of humanity, the people in the world. But here he's talking about it as the wickedness of the world. Men in their sin kind of organized together, even with evil spirits that work in that midst. The world like that. Keep yourself unstained from that. It's dirty in a world. My goodness, there's so much filth out there. I was talking to someone the other day. I said, you know, I get 1 hour a week to tell you guys how to think and how to live. Just 1 hour, that's all I get. And then you go out there and you listen to the filth on the radio, you watch the filth on TV and you don't turn it off soon enough. And you listen to the garbage other people are saying and you don't turn your ears enough. And you get filth and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And you gotta keep yourself as you minister in this world, as you outreach in this world, you have to keep that filth off your garments. What does that mean? That means you don't want even a little bit of that filth on your nice garments. You're clothed by Christ. You're supposed to look different. Don't let that filth on you. You have to find a way to walk among them and be different. And I don't mean just different. Brothers and sisters, we are not postmodern. We're not different. Well, that's your way of doing things, and this is my way of doing things. No, we're better. Say that to someone one time. Oh, you are so arrogant. We are better. We live a better lifestyle than them. Theirs is not equal to ours. Theirs is nowhere equal to ours at all. When people say, oh, you're bright, of course we're bragging. Of course it's better. It's better to have moral purity than to have the filth out there. Of course it is. Do any of you think it's not? They think the same thing when they find someone more wicked than themselves. They judge them because they know. They just don't like the fact that yours is higher than theirs. Of course it's a better lifestyle. That's why they need to be converted. That's why they need to be saved. You're supposed to live better than them. You're supposed to be the example. You're supposed to be the holy one among them, as they will mock, but you need to be. So, but Pastor, that sounds like I'm boasting. No, when they look at the good works that are in your life, then you give glory to who? To Christ. See, I used to be like you, and he saved me. He dredged me up. And he saved me. He washed me and cleansed me. And you can be like me too. If you weren't different and you weren't better, what's the point of becoming a Christian? Don't buy into that lie from Satan, please. Spiritually, we are to live among them. Remember, we have to live in the world, but not be what? Of the world. But we don't want to imitate their styles. Why would we want to imitate their styles? Their styles come from their heart. We don't want to imitate their attitudes. Why would we want to have their attitudes? We have a better attitude. We read the Beatitudes, and those are our attitudes, God willing. What about their humor? Their humor shouldn't be your humor. If you love their humor, you don't love God. Their sexy dress, why? Girls, why? Why do you imitate their sexy dress? Who are you dressing for? Their attitudes towards sports. You know, sometimes I make fun like I'm a fanatic with sports. In my heart, I'm really not, you know. But then you see someone who's really a fanatic and you're like, I can't joke around this person. This person's idol is sports. It can be many other things. They're complaining at work. Oh my, the constant complaining at work. Do you join it? The little humor around the water cooler. When you become a Christian, you're now better. We're to live in the world, be cautious as we move among them. They fling their dirt all the time. Don't let it land on you. You don't want to have evil like them. I mean, this is strong stuff we're going to get to. James 4:4, he says, "You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world," and I'll bet some of you wish that you were a friend of the world. I'll bet in your heart you really wish the unbelievers in your life would really, really like you and include you. And they don't. If you want to be a friend of the world, you make yourself an enemy of God. God has taken his side, and it's his side. And he says, step over onto my side. I'm going to destroy the world. I mean, how would you be able to hang out in Noah's Ark and also be outside of Noah's Ark at the same time back in the ancient days? How are you going to do that, right? Get in the boat and be saved, or stay outside and be drowned. Make a choice. That's the choice before people. Oh, but the world has so many things to offer. Things to offer that are quickly passing away and don't satisfy. Make your choice. 1 John 2, do not love the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, finish it for me. The love of the Father is not in them. Can't mix the loves. Can't. If you think you're mixing the loves, you're not. You're loving one or the other. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes. See, some are battling with sins of the flesh. Some are battling with sins of the eyes. And then for those that have all the self-control, it nails you next, the boastful pride of life. God is opposed to proud people. It says that in the Bible. To remain unspotted, you are not to isolate yourself from unbelievers. We're not monks. We're not more godly because we don't meet an unbeliever all week long. 1 Corinthians 5:9, Paul says, I wrote you in my letter not to associate with immoral people. Now he clarifies, I did not at all mean with the immoral people of this world, for then you would have to go out of the world. You're here in a world. You're supposed to be around unbelievers. You're just not supposed to let them rub off on you, right? Listen, brothers and sisters, Christianity takes courage. It takes courage. Are you going to stand up and be courageous? And by the way, don't accept the classifications and terminology of the world around you. Boy, the media just pushes this on us over and over and over again. You cannot adopt their language. When you start adopting their language, you've already had your first step into conforming to the way they are. You must purposefully choose to disagree and use different language. What do I mean? It's not a choice. It's the murder of a baby. You with me? It is the murder of a human being. It is murder. That is a real human being in there. Science says so. More importantly, God says so. It's not being gay. It's sexual perversion. We shouldn't even be using that terminology. It's not alcoholism. It's drunkenness. It's not an affair. Doesn't that sound nice? Like you're going to the fair. I'm going to have an affair. I'm going to the fair. It's fun. We'll go on the little twirly thing and we'll have an affair. And there are all kinds of other terms that are used now. I can't even use them from the pulpit. What is it? It's treachery. It's breaking a commandment. It's breaking a vow that you made. It's unfaithfulness. It's lying. It's not low self-esteem. Quit saying it. It's wallowing in self-pity. It's a proud person wishing they were better than they were. And other people would recognize them that way, and they're not, and so they're wallowing in the self-pity, and they have low self-esteem. No, it's pride. Pride that's hurting. That's what it is. It's not coming out. It's wallowing in shame. It's not colorful language. It's dirty words. You get the idea? Call it what it is. As soon as you start adopting their labels, you're already halfway thinking like them. If you want to please God, you'll be very concerned with not being stained by the world. I hope and pray you'll think about this a little bit. If your Christianity is true, you're going to want to be different from those in the world. You are going to look forward to being different. You don't want to be like them. You look at them and you pity them. You know where they're headed. You see what they're doing and you can see through it. Even their moments of joy and happiness in what they're doing, you see through it. You know the conflict that's there. You know the lack of peace that's there. You've been down that road. You've been there, done that. It's not what it claims to be. Now you want to save them from it because you have much better discernment now. And you know where real joy is. You know where real peace is. Can Can I ask you something? Are you happy to be a Christian? Are you inside your heart joyful to be a Christian? If you are, then don't go tasting the poison of the world. You won't, right? And by the way, some of you are texting stuff. My fingers don't even move that fast. And you're using abbreviations that if we were to write out what those abbreviations were and bring them in the church, I think you would blush. What do your little initials in there mean? Of course, the church is willing to forgive all these sins because we're all sinners. That's not the point. We're all forgiven. We're all washed. We're all willing to forgive. You have a sin, you need to come forward, talk to me or one of the leaders today. You can be saved this day. You can be washed and cleansed. Nothing special about us compared to you. You got some really bad hidden things you want to just spill out, then spill them out. But the key is if you're going to put your faith in Christ or not, because he'll wash you clean entirely. I was asked this past week, is love more important than truth? And I said, no. You can't even have love without truth. It wouldn't even be love. Truth and holiness is the foundation on which love rests. When truth and holiness crumble, love is lost. It turns into lust. It turns into a perverted form of love. I was once sitting in a class in a church years ago, and the pastor who led the class said, you know, the church needs to be a lot more like the local bar. Down there at the local bar, they can go down there, they can confess all their sins, and nobody judges them. And they feel comfortable there. So I was in the class. I raised my hand. I said, but at the local bar, they don't care if you live holy or not. In the church, we care very much whether or not we live holy. Makes it trickier. We have to have both mercy and a passion for holiness as well. For in holiness is blessing. So I don't think our goal is the same as the local bar. It's just me. But I think maybe we have a different calling. We have to be a place that washes sinners off and doesn't say, it's okay that you continue to sin. And I know that makes some people uncomfortable, but it won't make you uncomfortable if you really want forgiveness and you really want cleansing. All right, back to the conclusion. So what happens to the one who doesn't bridle his tongue, doesn't care for the helpless, and doesn't keep himself unstained by the world? The answer was already given. Verse 26, this man's religion is worthless. What does that mean? Vain, empty, of no use. It's a word that's used for idolatry. It's a vain thing. Acts 14:15 uses that. It's futile. There's a popular brand of jeans in a store that's called True Religion. You seen it? True Religion. I don't know what made them think that jeans would be True Religion. I haven't quite figured that one out. Whatever it is, I know it's wrong. There's a lot of religion out there that's not true. Here's the question for you. When you walk around, you talk to people, you go to work, is your religion going to be true? Because I'm going to tell you right now, the people out there need to see someone who's true, with true religion. And if it is, then you know that God's working on your mouth. And you know that you need to have a love towards those who are hurting and help them. And you know there's a lot of filth all around in the world, and it better be your goal to stay free and clean from that junk. And it may just start with something you have in your house right now and you need to get out of your house. Like some program, some video, something like that. It might be more restrictions you need on your laptop. It may be something you need to start right there. If your religion is true, I trust you'll make those changes.
It takes courage to live out your Christian faith in this dark world. You must make a choice to strive to live like Jesus in order to avoid the pull and influence of the world. Pastor Tom encouraged you today to walk among the world but be different, better than the world. Don't imitate its attitudes, values, humor, obsessions, or language, but instead take a stand for His holiness and the righteousness God is growing in you. If you enjoyed today's message on Discover Hope, we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 443-200-HOPE. That's 443-200-HOPE. We'd also like to ask you to prayerfully consider donating to this ministry to help us expand the reach of the gospel. You can give securely online at hopebible.org. Do you live in the area of Columbia, Maryland? If so, you're invited to become part of our Sunday morning gatherings here at Hope Bible Church. Join us for a morning of Bible study, worship, and fellowship. Find out more by visiting our website. Again, that's hopebible.org. The world looks up to and honors the rich, powerful, and successful, and only sees the qualities and privileges they dream of and aspire to. Next time on Discover Hope, Pastor Tom will contrast these kind of people to those who the Christian values. Believers should value in others and themselves and seek to be sacrificial, humble, loving, and selfless. You are promised a wealth you can't even imagine in heaven if you live this type of life. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for tuning in for this edition of Discover Hope. You can listen to more messages from this and other books of the Bible by visiting hopebiblechurch.org. And be sure to join us again right here on Discover Hope.